the end of July, and we're on a gravel road near Virgis, Minnesota. Virgis is a small town of 350 people tucked between Detroit Lakes and Maplewood State Park, right on the line between Otter Tail and Becker County. The trees are still thick here, even after 150 years of logging and farming and tourism have transformed the landscape. Elm, oak, and pine crowd the narrow road like they're closing in. The air's thick, too. Any Minnesotan with their salt will tell you it's the humidity. But we're in Lakes Country and it's summer. It's gorgeous and green. The drive in on Highways 10 and 59 shows the water's blue, the fields are blooming, and there's still enough wilderness here for whitetail and raccoons and walleye. Both of us grew up in Otter Tail and Douglas counties just to the south, so we know there's a few bears and coyote and beaver here too. If you've read the histories of this place, you know how long it's been called paradise.
We've been driving through a series of minimum maintenance roads called the Virgis Trails, and we're stopped near Camp Cherith Road to take photos of a deer's ribcage. It's hanging from a piece of twine tied to an elm tree, maybe 6 feet from the road, like some kind of omen in Grimm's fairy tales. It's exactly the kind of thing we hope to see on our little expedition today. There are strange things lurking in these trees, even if they're kids having fun with a local legend, and some of those things cast a pretty long shadow. A couple of miles away, a 20-foot sculpture in Virgis Park says, "This is the home of the loon, Minnesota's iconic lake bird." But most others here will tell you that something else lays claim to these parts, an aggressive 10-foot humanoid creature. In other parts of the country, it's known as Sasquatch or Bigfoot, but in this Minnesota town, it's known as the Virgis Hairy Man. I'm Matt Hopper.
I'm Davin Waite.
And you're listening to Paranormal North.
The possibilities are unlimited.
In here with us.
Dim the lights if you wish.
You're listening to Paranormal North.
All right, welcome to Paranormal North, presented by Forum Communications and the Historical and Cultural Society of Clay County. Please support your local historians and your local journalists with a membership or a subscription today. This podcast takes a look at some of the stranger stories that feature into our history in and around the Red River Valley, from Dakota prairies to the lakes and forests of Minnesota, Manitoba, and Ontario. We've each been horror nerds since childhood, growing up on Tales from the Crypt and Stephen King.
We each work in local news and history, too, and we've stumbled across a number of strange stories that we can't wait to share. It turns out people love to talk about ghosts and aliens and monsters. So on that note, if you have a story you'd like to share or an area legend you'd like us to look into, email us at paranormalnorthpodcast@gmail.com. We can't wait to hear from you.
In this first episode, we're on the trail of a Sasquatch who's been wandering through campfire stories in Minnesota since the 1960s. Matt, how does our furry fiend, the Virgis Hairy Man, arrive on the scene?
Let's go back to October of 1969. President Nixon is in his first year of office. The United States is deep into the Vietnam War, and massive anti-war demonstrations are taking place here at home. Summer is over, kids are back in school, and Minnesota sports fans start getting comfortable with disappointment after the Twins are eliminated from the pennant race. For true crime aficionados, such as myself, some big stories remain in the headlines. The Manson family's Tate LaBianca murders from August still linger in conversations, and the Zodiac Killer is back in the headlines. In other words, there might be just a little more Halloween in the air this year. A Virgis teenager named Ken Zitzo is out for a joyride in a 57 Ford. He's 16. His older brother Dwayne is in the back seat with his girlfriend Pam. It's almost 10 p.m. They turn on a County Road 130, or the Klondike Road, and drive into the Twilight Zone. Suddenly, a creature leaps onto the road and stands upright like a man, a big, spring-loaded man. It's standing at a towering 7 to 8 feet tall. Its shoulders are 4 feet wide, and its arms are down to its knees. It's covered in hair. It looks like a gorilla, but with a thick beard. Ken continues to drive forward and pass the creature, and as he does, the beast raises its arms as if to stop the vehicle. His backseat passengers, Dwayne and Pam, apparently miss the entire encounter, so Ken turns the vehicle around to give everyone a look. This proved to be a big mistake. Rather than retreating into the woods, which is typical Bigfoot behavior according to most accounts, the hairy beast stood its ground. This time, Ken, Dwayne, and Pam all got a good look at the creature, and something to remember it by. As they drove past the hairy beast, it attacked the car, striking the vehicle with its hands and leaving a large dent in the trunk. Pam and the Zitzo boys escaped that night, but it wouldn't be their last encounter. Ken continued to search over the coming weeks for the creature, and he apparently saw it a few more times that year. On at least one occasion, he spotted it running through area fields in the moonlight. After winter break, Ken and Dwayne resumed their hunt that following spring of 1970. On one of their excursions, Ken and Dwayne found an abandoned shack near Trowbridge Lake, about 4 miles northwest of Vergas. Under the shack, they found an old mattress that was thick with wild animal smell. So, assuming they'd found the monster's lair, they burned it to the ground. After that, the Zitzos never saw the hairy man again.
Ken and Dwayne Zitzo's hairy man story is probably the best Hollywood version we have. I don't know if I'm more impressed with the Frankenstein ending or that Zitzo confidence.
Oh, that old Zitzo confidence. You know, they're either heroes that burned down the monster's lair or they just destroyed someone's forest retreat. I feel like every Midwestern male has at least one crazy story involving the woods. I know I have a few for my teenage years. So when you look at the numbers, I guess the Zitzos really came out ahead.
It's important, too, to point out that this story is first widely reported in a 1991 article in the Detroit Lakes Tribune, even though Ken had shared the story with several Vergas residents by then. He later repeated it in an interview with Moorhead Bigfoot researcher and author Mike Quast. More on him later. But the Zitzo sighting isn't the earliest. According to the same 91 Tribune article, in 1967, 2 years prior to the Zitzo's night, a Perm teenager named Dave Brune was driving through the trails with friends. He was 15. Brune was out around 10 p.m., and like the Zitzos, the hairy man leapt into his memories. At a cutting in the road, something jumped from the high bank of the hill onto the hood of the car. Brune gunned the engine and swerved the car sideways, knocking the monster from the hood. He remembered it as a big, hairy thing, big enough to block most of his view of the road and even the lights of the car. But he claimed he hadn't gotten a good look in the chaos of the moment. So these are really the earliest two records we have of a Vergas hairy man. Some vague references allude to sightings in the 50s, but it's the Zitzos and Dave Brune who tell us the most about these early hairy man years. In both cases, teenagers out for a joyride and they encounter a monster on the road. And there are dozens, if not hundreds, of similar reports in the area.
So you've read some of the local histories of this place, right? Why does a hairy man show up in the late 1960s?
Yeah, I've been thinking about this a lot, too. If you tend to believe in a Bigfoot, which I don't, you might think about the baby boom. There's more Americans than ever before, so there's more pressure on wildlife habitat. For example, we know that the deer population crashes in these years, and that Minnesota canceled the 71 hunting season because of it. I think it's important, too, that we're mentioning Nixon and Vietnam. We're in the Cold War. Nuclear weapons are still weighing heavily in people's minds. President Kennedy, his younger brother Robert, Malcolm X, Martin Luther King Jr., all recently assassinated. There's a deadly flu pandemic in 68 and 69, the H3N2 Hong Kong flu, so even more folks are grieving than usual. Life is pretty traumatic for a lot of people. The news is full of violence, elections are divisive, people feel powerless and vulnerable, so anxiety and paranoia are up. They're scary years. Even the moon landing, which for many Americans was a hopeful, unifying moment, is to a smaller but substantial and growing number of Americans further evidence of corruption in government and media, who had just collaborated on the fake of a century. So, you know, even if we can't explain the sightings, I think it might make sense that people are more apt to believe these stories in the late 60s. Why do you think these stories take off at this time?
Well, in 1967, the holy grail of Bigfoot footage came out in the form of the Patterson-Gimlin film. And that's where we get that iconic shot of Bigfoot bounding through the Northern California wilderness and briefly looking at the camera. So we have that video being shot about 2 years before the Zitzo's encounter. Not much earlier than that, the Yeti and the Abominable Snowman are showing up in B-movies by the 1950s. The term Bigfoot came into the public consciousness in 1958 when national news out of Humboldt County, California described giant footprints discovered in the mud. And in 1960, there's also a large Yeti expedition led by Edmund Hillary and TV host Marlon Perkins. Another major contributor to Bigfoot lore was making the rounds in the Midwest in the late 60s. A Minnesota man named Frank Hansen is exhibiting a supposed Bigfoot corpse encased in a block of ice at fairs, expos, and shopping malls in the Midwest. He calls it the Minnesota Iceman and the Sibirsky creature.
That part of this story, the connection between the Virgus Hairy Man and the Minnesota Iceman, is really interesting to me. We know that Frank Hansen is touring this freezer and whatever's inside of it all around the Midwest, but we don't know exactly when or where it gets to the Red River Valley. Mike Quast, that researcher we mentioned earlier, he's also the author of Bigfoot Chronicle, a researcher's continuing journey through Minnesota and beyond. He wrote that the Iceman is on exhibition in Fargo's Westacre malls in the 70s. I'd love to know if it gets there sooner or if it's showing up in Fergus Falls, Alexandria, Detroit Lakes. So if you're listening, especially if you have newspaper clippings or a souvenir or something, please let us know. We're interested in any piece of evidence you can provide. Email us at paranormalnorthpodcast@gmail.com.
Absolutely. If you have leads or evidence or research that you'd like to share, please reach out. Was the Minnesota Iceman in a tent out in the parking lot of the Westacres Mall? Or was the grotesque corpse greeting customers as they walked into JCPenney? These are the important questions we're trying to answer. Also, just on a quick side note, there's a great episode of the original Unsolved Mysteries TV show that features the story of the Minnesota Iceman. I believe it's in the beginning of season 7, and you can find it on YouTube, so do yourself a favor and check that out.
Okay, so when we last left the Hairy Man, it's the spring of 1970, and at least two groups of teenagers have seen him around 10 p.m. in the Virgus Trails.
And the Zitzos just burned down a smelly shack.
You know, in a chaotically neutral kind of way, maybe it's just evil, I don't know, but I think that's hilarious. Would you have burned down the Hairy Man's shack?
I suppose it depends how offensive the smell was to me.
It's a pretty smelly shack.
Okay, well, I don't know if I would have been so bold as to burn the entire thing down. I mean, you'd think if they were tracking this thing for as long as they claim to be, they would have left the shack alone and maybe set up camp nearby and either tried to get a picture or just see if it came back or something. But the Zitzos went a different route. They torched the creature's lair and never saw the monster again. But they didn't drive the Virgus Hairy Man from the trails completely.
They always come back.
They do, and that's good for us. 2 years later, the Hairy Man runs into a girl who features pretty prominently into the monster's legend. This sighting takes place at the end of 1972. At this point in history, President Nixon has just won a second term, Eugene Cernan has just become the 12th and final man to walk on the moon, and Minnesota is up to its knees in winter. Two young girls, 12-year-old Cheryl Hansen, also known as Sherry, and her cousin, Jolynn Hansen, take their snowmobiles out for an afternoon ride. Their excursion takes them through the Lost Highway off County Road 130, only about a mile or two southwest of Virgus. On their journey, they come across an old cabin in the woods. Being a couple of kids having a good time, it's only natural they decide to investigate. So, like you do, Sherry and Jolynn inch their way closer, circling the cabin on their respective snowmobiles. It's all fun and games until something happens that shatters this peaceful scene and turns it into the stuff of nightmares. As Sherry would recount, years later, all of a sudden, a beast-like creature popped out of the cabin holding a huge stick or hatchet and started chasing us. It had very broad shoulders, and I was trying to rationalize what it was. But what really stood out to me, it was barefoot in the snow. We took off fast and went back to tell the adults.
These details are taken from a 2012 Tribune article by Brian Wirima, but Sherry Hansen's accounts had circulated in the community for decades. She's the woman who alludes to sightings from the 50s in 1991, and then in 2009, she shared a brief account of the legend on Lakes Access TV3, a local Detroit Lakes station. That video was subsequently published on YouTube. In the video, she suggests that the creature would have been driven from the area by development in the 80s, which accounted for the relative absence of sightings following the 70s. She also casts some doubt on her earlier childhood assessments. In this video, she says, "Now that I've gotten older, I can rationalize it and say there's no hairy man. There's no creature that's going to chase us." Instead, she thinks it may have been a hermit, a theory that's been shared by others. A 2019 Tribune article suggests the same, referencing an anonymous loner who lived in Old Man Bunley's shack.
Old Man Bunley?
Old Man Bunley. And he would have gotten away with it, too, if it hadn't been for those meddling kids.
So this brings to question, is the Virgus Hairy Man really a Sasquatch-type creature or something else?
You know, I think myths and folklore are pretty powerful, and I'm pretty skeptical of animals with no fossils or remains. How about you?
You know, I am skeptical as well, but I am firmly in the camp of I want to believe, and I really hope most other people are too. You know, Devin, there are plenty of theories as to why there are no Bigfoot fossils or remains. They could just be living so deep in forests across the country that their bones are unreachable.
What are the other theories?
That Bigfoot is actually an interdimensional being that chooses to visit our planet in that form. Now, why they choose to look like that instead of a normal human and only explore the deep woods is a whole other question. But it's a fun theory, and it would explain why, one, we have no Bigfoot remains, and two, why some areas that have reported Sasquatch sightings make mention of UFOs in the same vicinity around the same time. Bigfoot could really be an alien getting a first-hand look at Earth.
That's one way to look at it.
See, I'm expanding your mind. But let's circle back to your original question. Is the Virgus Hairy Man a Sasquatch-type creature or something else? It's hard to say, but we do know that the Hairy Man encounters seem to be more violent than typical Bigfoot sightings. Bigfoot usually retreats, whereas the Hairy Man attacks. He chases children with weapons, attacks cars, and in 1978, he supposedly kills a farmer's dog. Usually, Bigfoot, terrifying as he is, just howls, breaks tree limbs, and throws rocks. So, like Sherry Hansen does in her later reports, some people try to explain the Virgus Hairy Man as just that, a hairy man. As the story goes, some say there was a well-known hermit who lived near the Virgus Trails for decades. His family owned a big portion of the land all around the Lost Highway near Virgus. Sometime during his life, for whatever reason, he was exiled by his family and forced to live in the wilderness for the rest of his days. He apparently literally lived off the land for most of his life, always wearing furs no matter what time of year, never taking a shower, growing long, straggly hair, and either living in an old farmstead located on the Virgus Trails or underneath the porch of an old house. As time went by, the hermit's family sold off their land, but the hermit thought it still belonged to his family, which would somewhat explain his aggressive behavior towards those he saw as trespassers.
How much of this have we corroborated, the hairy man theory? I guess, has anyone else written about this?
Yeah, it's hard to say. Mainly, there's a bunch of word-of-mouth stories that I found online. Couldn't really find any hard evidence of this person existing. The deeper you dig into the hermit theory, the more outlandish some of the stories become. One story said the Virgus Hairy Man was actually a local man who murdered a group of teenagers one night, then retreated into the woods, but that's not true. The deeper you dig into the Virgus Trails, the crazier the stories get. Apparently, locals would have you believe that the Hairy Man isn't the only frightening tale tied to the town. Other stories include a graveyard on the trail near Camp Cherith, where headstones glow at night, instances of robed figures circling frightened motorists and chanting until their car batteries die, and even legend that the real Jason Voorhees was killed at Camp Cherith, but he returns at midnight on Halloween to the sounds of screams and chainsaws. That one is especially entertaining because it came from the Detroit Lakes Tribune, and the paper basically printed a high school kid's article talking about ghosts and monsters on the Virgus Trails around Halloween, which I am all for. If that could become a day-to-day periodical, I would be very happy. And again, we'd love to hear more stories from the Virgus Trails or beyond, which you can email us at paranormalnorthpodcast@gmail.com. Anywho, in the case of the Virgus Hairy Man, beast or hermit, there's not much to support the hermit theory.
This is disputed by Mike Quast, too, who seems to be the man who's devoted more time to this creature than anyone else. He's authored several books on the subject, including, again, Bigfoot Chronicle, A Researcher's Journey Through Minnesota and Beyond. And he believes that the hairy man was not only a legitimate Bigfoot or Sasquatch, but that there were enough varying reports and inexplicable footprints in the region to believe the Virgus hairy man actually could have been the Virgus hairy Ben, a Bigfoot family of three.
Before we get into who Mike Quast is, I want to take a moment here to say, if you're interested in this story or Bigfoot stories in general, buy his books. Bigfoot Chronicle is awesome. It's just under 300 pages, and it's a great overview of Bigfoot sightings in Minnesota. It's really cool because his travels take him to just about every town in Minnesota. And if there's another book out there with this much in-depth research about Sasquatches in the state, I have yet to find it. He has a few books for sale, but you can buy them by emailing him directly at mqstk@aol.com. Again, that's mqstk@aol.com. I highly recommend you check him out. As Mike states in his book, his lifelong interest in Bigfoot was sparked back in 1976 when he had his first Bigfoot experience at just 8 years old.
So this is only a few years after a snowmobiling Sherry Hansen and her cousin are chased away by the hairy man.
Yes, except Mike's sighting took place near Strawberry Lake, which is about 40 miles north of Virgus. While on a Sunday drive with his parents, about 100 yards up the road, he spotted something on the outskirts of the woods that would change his life forever. What first appeared to be nothing more than a burnt tree trunk was actually a solid black figure. Mike thought this figure looked strange and that it couldn't be a burnt tree trunk because nothing else around it was charred. Before he knew it, the figure stepped away from the road and walked into the trees. Whatever it was 6 to 7 feet tall. It walked too upright to be a bear and it was too large to be a man. Mike says no one else in the car happened to be looking at that exact spot at that moment, but it was enough for him to know Bigfoot was out there.
We should add a note here, too. Mike doesn't believe his Strawberry Lake Bigfoot in 1976 was one of the same beasts down in Virgus. He believes quite a few of the creatures have lived here in the lakes country.
Yes, that is right. Mike's search for Bigfoot began after graduating high school in 1986, when he was ready and able to commit more time to his fascination. He started his journey by looking for the humanoid creature that was closest to him, the Virgus hairy man. On March 31st, 1989, Quast was exploring the snowy Virgus trails near a power line corridor on the Detroit Lakes end of the trails. On the path, he found what appeared to be a footprint about 12 inches long. It had a narrow heel and only two toe prints were visible. Unfortunately, as Mike attempted to take a picture of the footprint, a snowdrift he was standing on collapsed and he fell on the track, destroying any trace of it.
I want to pause here to give a little context too, but mostly to point out the 80s bangers that were heavy on the radio at this time. I looked into it, they're pretty good. Mike Quast, when he finds this, it's Friday, March 31st, 1989. So that's 2 months into President George H.W. Bush's presidency. The Exxon Valdez just filled Prince William Sound with oil a week ago. Rain Man won the Oscar for Best Picture on Wednesday. And if you're looking at the top 10 hits, we're seeing guys like Milli Vanilli, Roxette, New Kids on the Block, Fine Young Cannibals, and Guns N' Roses. What's Mike listening to, and what's your Bigfoot hunting soundtrack?
Well, I guess when you say Guns N' Roses, Welcome to the Jungle.
Oh, sure.
Is the first thing that comes to mind, even though he's in a forest, I guess. And I feel like reading his book, I can't remember if he actually talked about songs that he listened to. I wouldn't be surprised if he does at some point because he's pretty detailed and thorough when he talks about all his journeys that he goes on. But if I had to pick something for him, I'd go more conservative with like Bon Jovi or something kind of middle of the road.
Sure, Heartland, maybe John Mellencamp.
Yeah, I mean, he's out there, he's on a mission, he's focused. But I know when I'm out squatching, it's got to be Metallica. Nothing says Bigfoot hunt more than swinging my knocking stick against a tree to some heavy metal.
It's at this same time, too, that Mike learns about another sighting. A Virgus woman tells him that she's sweeping her front porch and shaking the dirt out from her rugs when a Bigfoot scurries out from under the porch and runs away. So Mike returns to the area at the end of August with a new sense of purpose.
This time, he returned to the same power line corridor where he accidentally destroyed the 12-inch footprint. Lucky for him, he found another footprint, but this one was 16 inches long. Behind that imprint, he found another 16-inch track with three clear toe impressions. Over the years, Mike would return a few more times, finding several tracks in the Virgus trails, where he made casts of the imprints that I believe he still keeps with him to this day. He returned to the same area throughout the early 90s, finding tracks 12, 16, and 20 and a half inches long, with the latter having a stride of 7 feet. This is what led him to believe the Virgus trails may have been inhabited by a Bigfoot family. As Mike writes in his book, these tracks would turn out to be the last pieces of evidence for the hairy man known to be found, and as tracks of once wild land were being developed and built upon, the creatures seemed to finally leave the area. It seemed the legend may have come to an end. The last sighting took place in 1989, and the local Bigfoot hunter had abandoned the search.
That is, until a TV production crew from the Sci-Fi Channel shows up at the end of May 2012 and unearths a new piece of evidence. They were there to shoot an episode of Haunted Highway, Jack Osborne's paranormal investigation show.
Jack Osborne, if you don't know, is also Ozzy Osborne's son.
Haunted Highway followed four paranormal investigators exploring these mysteries around the U.S. The Virgus Hairy Man took the second half of the premiere episode. Word of the show got around and elicited a few new stories in local media, and this brought forth a few more stories on Mike Quast and Sherry Hansen, as well as that artifact, a small skull. According to Kim Doyle, the owner of the Virgus 66 gas station, a longtime Virgus resident brought it in and wished to remain anonymous. Kim would only say that he was a quiet, respectable man from one of the oldest families in town. You've seen a picture of this skull. What do you think?
Oh, where do you start? This is, you go online and search Virgus Hairy Man skull. I'm sure it'll come up pretty quickly. For the horror movie fans out there, it reminds me of that opening scene in Child's Play 2, where you get that close-up of Chucky's burnt doll face. I actually rewatched that scene today just to see how, and some of the burns and everything kind of match up pretty closely.
Is it Chucky? Did we find that hairy skull? Man is Chucky?
I mean, I guess it could be. I don't know. The comically large teeth in the hairy man skull don't quite fit the same teeth that were in Chucky's mouth. It's kind of like that, but instead being made out of plastic, it looks more like it was made out of some sort of concrete mold. And again, it has almost comically square brick teeth in its mouth. You have your two eye sockets and then a large nasal cavity about the same size as those eye holes. And if you were to draw a horizontal line from one eye to the other, the nasal cavity would be nearly right at the same height as the eyes. The skull looks like it's crumbling or burnt, and there's apparently part of a vertebrae still attached with some vegetation stuck to it. Looks like something someone dug out of a swamp. In 2012, Ken Gerhard, a nationally renowned cryptozoologist, looked at photos of the apparent skull and determined that there are several features on the skull that were either missing or in the wrong place, debunking the notion that it was an anthropoid or belonging to the primate family. Gerhard said in an interview, "What I noticed right off the bat was the unnatural features the skull had, or at least 10 to 12 noticeable characteristics which were missing for a hominid, defined as being part of the human family. The face of the skull does not resemble a human, but there isn't a cavity large enough to hold a large brain." Gerhard also says, "During my time in this field, I've seen ingenious manufactured productions, but one thing I do know for sure, it does look bizarre and weird. Unfortunately, it was never examined by a medical professional."
The man who owned the skull said he got it from a family member who had it 5 or 6 years before bringing it into the gas station. He said it was found around the old Virgus trails where most of the hairy man sightings occurred, and that the original owners told him that they believed the skull belonged to one of the hairy man's offspring.
2012 ended up being a productive year for the Virgus hairy man legend. Somewhere around a dozen people came forward during the Sci-Fi investigation, all with their own eyewitness accounts. And a skull was produced as evidence. The Haunted Highway episode came and went. Since then, things have been relatively quiet in the town of Virgus, with many believing that whatever roamed the old Virgus trails has moved on.
The town now holds a charitable Virgus Hairy Man celebration every October that includes a 5K run through the woods. Those who finish can pick up a shirt proclaiming, "I outran the hairy man." That may be as close as any get to the monster these days. Let us know if you prove otherwise.
And that wraps up our tale of the Virgus Hairy Man. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Paranormal North. I'd like to give another big shout out and thanks to Mike Quast for putting together one of the most detailed books on Bigfoot in Minnesota I've ever been able to find. If you have the slightest bit of interest in Bigfoot, I honestly can't recommend this book enough. It's a very fun and informative read. I picked up his book, Bigfoot Chronicle, A Researcher's Journey Through Minnesota and Beyond. But he has others to choose from. He actually has one other book that I'd like to pick up. It takes a close look at Bigfoot footage that's been captured over the years. Please pick up his books, support a local author and lifelong Bigfoot researcher, and you can do that again by contacting him at mqstk@aol.com. Also, a lot of our research came from Forum Communications. If you subscribe to Inform today, you can access Forum archives, and you'll get access to unlimited content across more than 20 Midwest news sites. It's a great way to support local journalism.
A lot of our research also came from the Historical and Cultural Society of Clay County, who direct the YEMCOM Center Museum, including Clay County, Minnesota's collections and archives. Stop in at the museum and consider a membership to support local history.
And if you have a story you'd like to share with us or a story you'd like us to investigate, feel free to contact us. If it's paranormal, true crime, or just plain weird, you can contact us at paranormalnorthpodcast@gmail.com. Look out for more episodes involving the truly strange, deeply rooted in Minnesota and North Dakota coming soon. Until then, I'm Matt Hopper.
I'm Davin Waite.
Catch us next time on Paranormal North. Theme music, outro, and other tunes provided by Witch, Witch, Witch.